Hey everybody, welcome to episode 48 of Not Your Mother's Goose. We've only got 3 full shows left, and that means it's fire sale time and everything must go. I'm Topher Goggin, and here are just some of the things we've got coming up today. We'll chase down the bad guys with those darn kids from Scooby-Doo, rant about the poor hospitality from the folks in She'll Be Coming Around the Mountain, and air some more frustrations about the challenges that come from playing the game Mousetrap. Our news is sponsored by the Big Bad Wolf's new meal kit delivery service. And speaking of deliveries, Andrew Mitchell has delivered early with a massive Rapunzel's Jukebox medley that you just can't miss. Speaking of Rapunzel's Jukebox, our next show will be our 3rd Behind the Music special, where you can catch all of our tunes from the last year of the show, including Insider Scoop from Andrew about making it. Now, if you can't wait that long, get yourself over to our YouTube page. That's youtube.com/@@ Not Your Mother's Goose, and subscribe. There are tons of Rapunzel's Jukebox videos there, and that will be the future home of the show after our grand finale towards the end of next month. Get yourself in with the cool kids now. Like I said, we got a lot going on today, so we'd better get rolling. Grab your Scooby snacks and a rubber mask. Let's fire up the mystery machine. Scooby-Doo. Ever have a project, but you didn't want to spend the money to hire professionals? So instead you ask some incompetent teenager to re-roof your pole barn for free by calling it an internship? Well, if instead of roofing, you're trying to rid your creepy house of a ghost or a boogeyman, and Sherlock Holmes isn't in your budget, why not outsource the project to a terrified version of Marmaduke and his 4 teenager friends? That's Scooby-Doo in a nutshell. Wherever these people are from, there seems to be an epidemic of criminal ghost hauntings rivaling the number of falsely accused murderers that show up in Matlock's office every week. When one of these spooksters arrives, the next thing to show up is a windowless pastel van called the Mystery Machine. And while your first guess of who might be driving this van would probably be a serial killer from some other podcast you like, in this case we get a group more closely resembling a high school quiz bowl team with a dog as the coach. Of course, if this actually was a quiz bowl team, it would be one of those squads you see where only one player needed a buzzer, since as best as I can tell, Velma was the only one of these 4 likely to be showing up for any honors courses. She was clearly the brains of the operation, despite the fact that jinkies probably won't be a word at the National Spelling Bee anytime soon. Then it's roughly a tie between the other 4, and I'm definitely including Scooby in those rankings. We've got Beefcake Fred, nominally the leader of the group, who would seem to bring all of the athleticism of Joe Hardy from the Hardy Boys to the table, just without the mystery-solving abilities. Then there's Daphne, whose primary skill set seems to involve getting kidnapped. Next we've got Scoob, a Great Dane with the approximate toughness of a Great Danish from your local bakery. Scooby-Doo will never get hired to fill in for Punxsutawney Phil, because he would run away regardless of whether he saw his shadow or not, and Spring would never get here. Then finally we've got Norville, better known as Shaggy. Don't get him confused with the other Shaggy, the one that sang that song denying he was having an affair with his neighbor despite being spotted on the bathroom floor together after borrowing the Emperor's new clothes. That one's not our Shaggy. If ours ends up in a bathroom, it'll be from eating too many Scooby snacks. And on that subject, is there any food item that is more confusing than the Scooby snack? Who is this intended for? The dog in the name, or the dog owner that seems to like them at least as much or more? I'm perplexed by this. Of course, my mom's dog apparently eats kangaroo, so I guess anything really is in play here. Your average Scooby-Doo mystery begins with the crew arriving at a building bearing a strong resemblance to the Tower of Terror and finding out that it's being terrorized by some sort of zombie, ghoul, or a ghost that looks like Willard Scott. After the obligatory kidnapping of Daphne, Shaggy and Scoob will run around in a veritable windmill of legs, Velma will figure something out, and then Fred will devise a trap for the monster with the approximate level of unneeded complexity of playing the entire game of Mousetrap just to open your fridge. Whether this trap is an actual factor in catching the goon, well, your mileage may vary. But sooner or later, the bad guy gets cornered, someone yanks off his mask, and that shockingly reveals the one creepy dude who lives in the building. Creepy dude then has an okay boomer get off my lawn moment, and that's that. Load him in the back of the creeper van. He'll be right at home. I don't know how you expect to stay up to date with what's going on in the world once this show ends. After all, we are your premier source for reporting about Little Bo Peep. But I do wish you luck. For now, though, I can still help. Here's the latest. Popeye and Olive Oil duet on We Don't Talk About Bluto. Princess Anna converts regrettable I Love Hans tattoo, now says I Love Hansel and Gretel. And we've got Pinocchio coming up later in Rapunzel's jukebox, but first he's in the news. And remember, just like Tom Brokaw, the news is for grown-ups. Pinocchio visits urologist. Growing older has been an interesting experience for Pinocchio, as the transition from wooden boy to wooden middle-aged guy has meant more than adding a few extra rings around the midsection. Unlike the problems of a real human, arthritis has been replaced with dry rot, and woodpeckers pose a completely different challenge. Recently, however, a new battle rose up, or didn't rise up, as the case may be. But Pinocchio didn't ask for Viagra or subscribe to one of those services that sends you a box in unmarked packaging once a month. Instead, he tried a different plan, summoning his fairy urologist to ask if she could transfer the truth-detecting spell on his nose southward. Let's just say that life has been interesting for Mrs. Pinocchio since the change was made, as attempts to answer questions like, "What do you think of this dress?" regularly cause her husband to spring into action. There has been one interesting side effect, however, as a particular question about a number of inches always leads to a lie, which within a matter of seconds then makes the original answer true. Interesting. With that, it is time for a break, and we have yet another product brought your way by the Big Bad Wolf. He is like the Shaq of fairy tale endorsers, I've found. Let's see what he's hawking today.
Hey, it's your favorite wolf, and let me tell you, I'm a busy guy. There's just no time anymore to walk to grandma's or blow down a house when I'm hungry. I tried those meal delivery services like HelloFresh, but come on, who wants to get vegetables in the mail? That's why I'm taking matters into my own paws and launching HelloFlesh, the meal prep kit made specifically for fairy tale carnivores. Try our best-selling PPP plan and we'll send you people in pig parts ready to eat. No more waiting in hopes that some lost German siblings will wander up to your door. When you subscribe to HelloFlesh, we take the porky planning out of villainous cuisine and make sure those peas stay where they belong, under the mattress. So if you're hungry for a rack of little lamb, HelloFlesh leaves our competitors in a pile of rubble. Our meals taste better than the little red hen's bread. And there's no wooden aftertaste like that stuff Monstro is selling with Pinocchio. Don't forget, every HelloFlesh delivery comes with the, a gingerbread man for dessert. Use code HUFFANDPUFF and take $30 off your first order today. It's fairy tale food with HelloFlesh. Order now.
You'll of course recognize the familiar voice of Brian Weifrich, back one more time to solidify his world record for most fake ads recorded on a phone for a fairy tale humor podcast. Thanks as always for the help, Weef. Now back to more headlines. Mike TV gets endorsement, changes name to Mike Hulu. Disney frustrated as new Pirates of the La Brea Tar Pits ride keeps getting stuck. And in news from the bookstore, Humpty Dumpty working on autobiography. Local egghead Humpty Dumpty is on his way to your bookstore soon, announcing yesterday that he plans to release an autobiography. The stories are easy, it's the title that's hard, Dumpty noted, saying that he continues to debate between the hard-hitting, over-easy, how my life got scrambled, versus the brighter tone of sunny side up. In addition to details of his catastrophic fall and struggles to recover, he plans to discuss lesser-known tales, including his participation in groundbreaking research with scientists from Crazy Glue and his ill-timed 1989 visit to Berlin that nearly led to a repeat of his wall-tumbling disaster. Dumpty said he plans to work with a ghostwriter on the project, not so much because he needs help with the composition, but because yolk keeps seeping into his keyboard and making the H stick. She'll be coming around the mountain. for today's very important discussion, I want to talk about who is the worst host in the world of fairy tales and nursery rhymes. Now, I'm not talking about villains and kidnappers. The beast throwing Maurice in the dungeon does not count here. I'm looking at folks who at least ostensibly invited people into their place. In that context, the queen from The Princess and the Pea does seem like a pretty strong contestant, but I'm here to propose a different contender. And that's all the folks from She'll Be Coming Round the Mountain. First, let's get past the stupid redundancy I often point out. Saying that she'll be coming around the mountain when she comes is about as useful as an airline publishing a schedule that says your plane will be leaving when it leaves. Though some of the airlines I fly could improve their on-time performance by trying that. Regardless, we have some sort of honored guest rolling in from around the mountain, and we should note that she should not be confused with the bear, because the bear goes over the mountain. This person, however, is important enough for some red carpet, since we'll all go down to meet her when she comes. But let's be honest, that's where the fine hospitality ends if we review what else we're going to plan once she gets here. Admittedly, those plans depend on which version of the song you choose, and there are plenty of choices. That includes one by Bing Crosby, and another one I found where, quote, we'll all have purple pizza when she comes. But for our purposes, we're going to rely on a very important source from the American Songbook, and that is the Sesame Street version of Bert and Ernie's Sing-Along. If you haven't heard this, it is a sing-along with the whole Sesame Street gang, Bob, Maria, Gordon, Big Bird, Oscar, Grover, the Count, and more, hosted by Ernie in his apartment bathroom while a disgruntled Bert is in the tub taking a bath. It's a trip. Check it out. Anyway, assuming that's our version, activity number one on the list is we'll kill the old red rooster when she comes. Isn't that nice? Welcome. Thanks for coming. Here's an axe. Now, I will admit that I was recently on a trip and the house where we were staying was neighbored by a rooster. And I kid you not, this rooster was set to constant cock-a-doodle-doo like there was somebody next door repeatedly hitting his snooze button. If that was the circumstance at this place, well, then I understand the verse and I hope maybe Annie Oakley is the one coming to visit. Otherwise, though, it seems like a rather gruesome welcome for your guest. And the activities coordinator isn't the only one getting two stars here, since the song also wraps up with, she will have to sleep with grandma when she comes. These are some really deluxe accommodations. Show up, kill a rooster, share a bed with grandma. Also, did anybody ask grandma about this? She might not want to give up the remote if Lawrence Welk has a special on. At the end of the day, this to me feels like one of those Airbnb listings where you really have to pay attention. Delightful six-bedroom country house on Mountainside Lake, and oh, by the way, you'll be staying in the tool shed with Grandma. Book now. Tarzan. Tarzan is one of those stories with about 50 different iterations, and we certainly can't cover them all. But it's pretty much as if Rudyard Kipling and Edgar Rice Burroughs decided to have a competition just to see who could write a less plausible kids raised by jungle animals story, and they bet a free appetizer at Applebee's for the prize. Kipling, via The Jungle Book, decided to have his youngster raised by an overbearing panther and a lazy bear, and ended up with a kid with a questionable haircut who walks around in his undershorts. Ed put his kid with a family of gorillas, and that apparently leads to Fabi O'Hare, washboard abs, and a love of Phil Collins music, while still walking around in undershorts. Now, as I said, you've got a lot of Tarzan versions out there, so you can pick which one will be in your heart, Disney or otherwise. But your general theme is this. Tarzan gets left in the jungle when his parents get off by some wildlife, then grows up with adoptive gorillas, getting really good at tree surfing. He also gains a mastery of the English language that's not great, but is at least stronger than most WWE wrestling villains and my Alexa when I'm trying to answer the question of the day every morning. Then, the people show up. In this case, the peeps take the form of a group of researchers who don't have a lot of good things in mind for Tarzan's gorilla fam. However, we've got one member of the research group who's different. That's Jane. Jane has apparently been let down by her buddy Dick and needs a new man. And if you've read Dick and Jane, you know that Jane doesn't require an extensive vocabulary to be impressed. Me Tarzan, you Jane. Good enough. Romance ensues. Just try to avoid any love triangles with George of the Jungle. Thanks to Tarzan's hormones, or perhaps his lifelong desire to see a real Taco Bell, he packs up and heads to try life in civilization, hopefully with Jane. Well, according to Disney, he barely gets aboard the cruise ship, leaving before bingo night even starts. In some versions, he actually makes it to the outside world. But the caveman in the city life isn't all it's cracked up to be. Outside of landing a few Geico commercials, Tarzan isn't a big fan. Soon he's booking a park pass reservation to go back to Animal Kingdom, where fortunately, thanks to his prior heroics, the gorillas are fans and set out the welcome mat rather than saying shut the front door when their former buddy rolls back into town in a new Armani suit. Of course, we can't just quite wrap everything up there because we've still got to figure out what to do with Jane, a sensible, successful woman whose boyfriend has just told her he'd rather spend time in his cave. Not like his man cave, just a cave. I think I know what Cosmo would recommend in this situation, and it's not chase this dude to the jungle and don't forget your loincloth. Alas, that's closer to where things end up. So let us know who gets the vine in the divorce. John Henry VIII. It's been a while since we've done one of our fairy tale before and afters, and today we're going to look at the story of John Henry VIII, where a beefy but temperamental monarch fights for the pride of humanity by battling, head-to-head with a new automated steam-powered guillotine. Okay, never mind. Let's not do that. Maybe we should just play a game of Big Hero 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon instead. So let's see. Number 1. Big Hero 6 stars Baymax. 2, Baymax looks like he might be a cousin of the Michelin Man. 3, they drove on tires in Days of Thunder. Not Michelin's, but close enough. 4, Days of Thunder starred Tom Cruise. And 5, Tom Cruise crushed Kevin Bacon in court in A Few Good Men. So we're there. And if we want to go to 6, remember that we've already done A Few Good Men in Tights on this segment, so we have really come full circle. Thank you for making such a fine use of the last 90 seconds of your life. Mousetrap. This is another segment about childhood games, specifically this time annoying childhood games. And we've got some strong candidates here. You've got Candyland, where my sister would always draw the ice cream floats card and beat me despite having no apparent talent. You've got trying to avoid setting off that damn buzzer on Operation, which could have been the most stressful thing in my life as an 8-year-old. Except perhaps trying to beat the clock before the tray would pop up on Perfection, which a variety of memes have speculated is single-handedly responsible for the increase in anxiety rates across the USA over the past 40 years. But in terms of pure aggravation, nothing, and I mean nothing, compared to Mousetrap. There is a reason it got the shout-out in the Scooby-Doo segment earlier. You remember this thing? Trust me, you were not building a better mousetrap. The goal here was to assemble a Rube Goldberg-style machine that was only slightly more complicated in its operation than a tactical helicopter. Without looking it up, I can remember a marble that had to go down a hill, a big tall bathtub on a pole, a teeter-totter where a man in a swimsuit would flip, and a hoisted mouse cage that might as well have been atop the Mario Brothers flagpole that definitely had no interest whatsoever in falling down on your opponent's mouse. This is the kind of mousetrap that the Humane Society could get behind. Regardless, you built the trap piece by piece as you moved your mice around the game board, then hoped you'd turn the crank and eventually catch the mouse being run by your opponent. I specifically remember there being a song from an ad that ended something like, "It flips the man into the pan, the trap is set, here comes the net." Bull shit. If you were really lucky, maybe you got to the flipping man. But the net never came down. And that meant that the game went on to everyone's great disappointment. And that's if everything was working correctly. If you were over at a friend's house, their game would inevitably be missing some pieces, which meant that a Super Ball was standing in for the marble, and G.I. Joe was in charge of doing the diving. Time after time, you turned the crank, that weird boot would kick, and somewhere in the middle, something would fail. It was like watching that Domino Master show, just with the $100,000 prize replaced with the right to be done with the game and go outside. On and on you would go, failure after failure, until you all got so honked off that you decided to try something a little more intellectually satisfying. Like a game of Hungry Hungry Hippos. As I hinted earlier, I was not expecting to have a new Rapunzel's Jukebox song for this show, so this is a real treat. Andrew Mitchell apparently has owned multiple copies of Tom Petty's greatest hits, so when he heard I was tinkering with a whole medley of Petty songs, he said that was going to go near the top of his to-do list. I'm not going to go into too much detail here because we'll get to talk about all of that during our Jukebox special next week, but I will tell you what to expect coming up. We start with Paul Bunyan, who will do some tree falling. Then You Don't Know How It Feels gets a Pinocchio twist. The Waiting becomes The Dating for Prince Eric and Ariel. And finally, if you didn't think you could make a parody of Row, Row, Row Your Boat, well, then you haven't heard Running Down a Dream turned into Rowing Down a Stream. That's all you need to know, so it is time to cue the tunes. Here comes Andrew Mitchell with his new Tom Petty medley on Rapunzel's Jukebox.
He's a big boy, pity his mama, cuts trees down, and he's totally huge, has a big axe, dug the Grand Canyon, a blue ox, bet it don't go moo. He goes a long way, walking across the country, makes a new lake, tromping through your yard, and well he undoes Johnny Appleseed, mister, chops them all down, it ain't even hard, yeah he's a tree. Tree falling, yeah he's tree. Tree falling. Tree falling, yeah he's tree falling.
Geppetto made a wish tonight, the fairy said it'd be alright. She would bring some life to me and add a cricket in for free. But well, I guess here's the point. I've got some working joints, got no strings, I'm unbound. I keep falling on the ground, 'cause I don't know how it feels. I don't know how it feels to be real. Noses come, noses go, when I lie, my nose grows. Then a whale swallowed me, lit a blaze, then he sneezed. Well, I guess, here's the point. Still got some working joints. Then I joined a puppet show. Got caged up, she let me go. 'Cause I don't know how it feels. I don't know how it feels to be real. ginger mermaid around. Oh, 'cause she did not let me drown. Yeah, we tried to chat, it wasn't so good. Our boat, it capsized, and I'm not sure how. Ariel's the only one who never said wow. And then she grabbed a fork, started plucking her brow. I said, lady, 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 the dating is the hardest part. Conversation leaves me scarred. The silence is nice until she has to fart. The dating is the hardest part. It was a beautiful day. My boat was out. I had the cooler filled up, going outdoors. Pulled the rope, but she wasn't starting. Stupid Evan Rude, where are my oars? I'm rowing downstream and doing it merrily. Don't you know my life's a dream? Keeping it out of the weeds, rowing downstream. Woo-hoo. 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 Woo-hoo.
Not one, not two, not three, but four Andrew Mitchell tunes all rolled together here on Rapunzel's Jukebox. If you enjoyed that, you will definitely want to come back next time, as 3 weeks from now, we will be playing all of our music from the last year on the show and talking to Andrew about it. Remember, you also can listen to most of it now by heading over and visiting Not Your Mother's Goose on YouTube. That address again is youtube.com/@NotYourMother'sGoose. And be sure to subscribe while you're there, because that both helps our visibility, that means I'd appreciate it, and I'll let you know when more stuff comes out. That does it for today. Just two shows to go. That sounds crazy to me. Thanks as always to Brian Weifrich and Andrew Mitchell for everything that they've done for the show. Come back on April 4th for our next episode. Until then, I'm Topher Goggin and the goose is loose. We'll see you soon on Not Your Mother's Goose.